This is made possible by Dustin Campbell, Owe Them Bones, Daily Tech News Show, Andy Beach, Nick Wood, and Craig.
Welcome to the Politics program for December 7th, 2022. Your old pal Justin Robert Young joining you after runoff Tuesday here in Georgia. Raphael Warnock returning to the Senate a little bit closer than some thought, at least as I am speaking to you right now. It is within a point, but we still have a lot of votes to count in very heavily Warnock area. So I would expect that spread to be at 2 or 3 points by the time it is all done. And so the midterms have officially come to an end. The Democrats do not the impossible, especially if you listen to people on this show, like Evan Scrimshaw, but rather the improbable. They gain a seat in the Senate. It looks as if the Trump playbook, specifically when it came to celebrity candidates like Herschel Walker and Dr. Oz, not quite what they thought. But we will move forward from here. The majority of this episode is going to be a conversation with myself and Kevin Ryan talking about something that, well, to be totally honest with you, we've talked a lot about behind the scenes, but we have not talked about publicly, and that is Kanye West. We are both massive Kanye West fans, and what has happened over the past month has been something that is hard to reconcile. So hopefully you guys will be able to appreciate our honesty and our, we often don't like to deal with the macro. We like to deal with the micro. We like to deal with the nuance. So you can go ahead and enjoy that here. But the top line that you should know is Raphael Warnock beats Herschel Walker in the Georgia Senate runoff. And now, here's Kevin Ryan and myself talking about Kanye. Welcome back to the show, buddy.
Good to be here, man.
Yeah. I mean, I think we've said this on the show before, but like the thing that we talk about the most as friends,
yeah,
is Kanye West.
For sure.
Like it's kind of constant, and you know, it's that and like politics and then whatever the kind of the general stuff is. But I try, because I know that Kanye West in better times is a controversial figure, especially like trying my audience's patience, that we try to not talk about it much on the show, because we can talk about other stuff that's interesting and people love to have you on the program. But I do feel like, especially now, news has slowed down. There's no reason why we should not be having the Kanye conversation, as it's intersected so much with politics. It's intersected with this strain of right-wing politics I feel like had kind of receded in reach. So where do you want to start? Because I feel like we can go for a day and a half talking about it. But where do we want to begin? Do we want to recap for folks who are not plugged in what the hell is happening? That would probably be a good place to start.
Yeah, let's do that. How far do you want to go back? What's our starting point?
Well, the college dropout released in So I would say that all of this really begins with, I mean, I don't know. I'm gonna not go back to yay, like the whole Dakota stuff. I mean, let's say that it begins with the fact that he has these massive stadium events. He releases an album that's pretty widely respected, especially considering he had had two that were, you know, kind of scattershot, seemingly kind of rushed. There was questions of whether or not he was trying to get out of a contract. But Donda was a big album. It was an iconic album for him. He was doing gigantic stuff. You know, there was really unquestioned reports that he was a billionaire. And then a divorce happens and things kind of get weird from there. I don't know. I mean, I guess everything has to begin with the DEFCON tweet, right?
Yeah, that's a good place to start, because that's when it really, that was probably the first moment when I was like, oh man, is he serious? And it was also, you can't ever tell with him fully. I mean, he's going around
what's a bit like, what is he, I mean,
did he mean to, like, misuse DEFCON? Did he, like...
Yeah.
It's because he plays with words all the time. Apparently, he was, like, a little tipsy.
He said on the Drink Champs that he definitely screwed up and thought that DEFCON, D-E-F, con, which is the way that the United States military assesses threats... that he thought that was DEFCON. And so
he always ruins the mystery. Like, it's funny because he's going around with a mask on all the time and he's never been more like transparent. Like he's trying to use the power of the veil, but he's just like vomiting everywhere.
So experienced Kanye watchers will know that he will spaz out and kind of have these social media wars with people. And this got worse as soon as the divorce happened and he was kind of ejected out of, really even prior to the divorce, when he was sort of ejected out of the fully controlled Kardashian empire, which that is something that is very managed, that is very manicured. Any element of humanity that you see out of that family is vetted, or at the very least, and I don't even want to make it seem like they are totally managed by their mother, but they are all pulling in the same direction. They want everybody in the family to be collecting a lot of money for being themselves. When he sort of rebels against that, you had seen these things where he was criticizing the mom and criticizing the mom's boyfriend. And so what I've seen since then is kind of just like an escalating pattern of him pointing out people for whom he's got a problem with that are actively harming him. That then snowballed into Adidas is mistreating me.
Yeah.
And the Gap is mistreating me. I want out of.
And then he went to the Jews. He's like, the Jews did it. Like, just like the net keeps getting wider.
And we get to anti-Semitism. So now that we're here, let's, before we go any further, have a conversation about anti-Semitism.
Yes. Yeah.
Anti-Semitism is, for me, unique, even in other prejudices, in how unchanged it is from the old world to our modern world. Like, racism normally change it. Like, if you were to hear somebody say something racist about a white guy, say something racist about black people in like the 1800s, it's different than now. If somebody is, you know, I mean, I'm sure that there are threads, there are similarities, and I'm not even saying better or worse for anybody who wants to draw that line. I'm just saying different. Like, if you go back and read old world anti-Semitic, like old European, like Kristallnacht, like the pogroms kind of stuff. This is all the same thing. Like, it's always kind of becomes the same thing. And I think that that's part of the reason why it is so present for Jews, is that you also then know all the ugly stuff and you're like, well, the rhetoric hasn't really changed. So is the ugly stuff also right around the corner? Are the awful persecutions of the Jewish communities also around the corner?
Yeah. So I would say the most egregious part of this for me is that Kanye is like using Christianity to justify a lot of this.
Yeah.
And he's got I Like Hitler right next to talking about the merits of Christianity.
Yeah.
Which is, to me, that's like, I mean, just like logically, politically, but like certainly theologically, that's like terrifying. Because I think every time a Jew was murdered in the Holocaust, Christ was crucified again. Like and Hitler was directly responsible for it.
Yeah.
So if you're a Christian, you have to be against the Holocaust. That should be like obvious, yeah. You know?
And I'm glad that we are stating this very plainly, so everybody knows exactly where we are on these on these situations before we tend to get into the nuance of the fever dream of haze maze that is, you know, trying to understand Kanye Omari West now. I think that the evolution, or like I said, lack thereof of an evolution of anti-Semitism from, you know, protocols at the Elders of Zion to Kyrie Irving's Instagram links, like there's really not a whole lot different. And it comes back to this idea of comparative pain. And that's where I think if there is a human way to enter into understanding Kanye West, that his entire career has on some level been about the Black struggle, for which there are two halves: the pain from which it comes from, historic and current, and the pathway forward. And he has always been a pathway forward kind of guy. I think he has always blanched at the idea that we should only live in the pain, or that humanity should only understand the pain, that humanity also needs to understand, you know, the path, where to walk from here, how to educate and move forward. But boy, when you talk about two communities that got a lot of very present pain, that, Black communities and Jewish communities are two of certainly the most present.
That's what's been very tricky from the start. I'm so sorry. I have like two screaming babies in the background.
That's fine. You want to know what? The chaos is I would have it no other way considering this conversation. Oh,
absolutely. Yeah, absolutely. That's what has been tricky from the start with this particular Kanye scandal, is that it opens up something to the public, which is has been very private, which is not a conflict. It's a complicated relationship between the Black community and the Jewish community, particularly in the entertainment industry.
Yes, yes.
Where there's a symbiotic relationship, but it's, I feel like for Black entertainers, a lot of times there's like the suspicion of exploitation. It's like, you helped me get here. You being, Jewish representation.
Yeah. Let's make this very, very clear.
Yeah.
Jewish.
This is tricky.
There are many people for whom, and it is a parodyable joke. Like if you go watch the movie Rock Hard, Walk Hard, the agents for which bring Dewey Cox, our hero, along. And this is, again, summarizing every music biopic. Biopic. So instead of just having a coded Jewish character for whom shepherd the non-Jewish artist throughout their road of trials,
the Walk Hard takes the parody to the next level and makes them literal Hasidic Jews with, you know, the entire accoutrement. So it's like, this is not a secret. There are a lot of people, and there are historical reasons why Jewish communities are in banking and entertainment.
Yep.
That being said, there is historical context, and then there is modern reality. And the modern reality is, in a lot of entertainment fields, and we just spent the last 5 years, the last 6 years, talking about exploitation on gender roles in terms of entertainment. That is no different when it comes to money. And certainly there are plenty of stories for anybody who's been a fan of the music industry to listen to the stories of your favorite artists and find out that, hey, boy, if they're lucky, only the first contract they signed was hilariously exploitative. And it wasn't every contract that they signed past there. I just saw a clip of Dame Dash, formerly of Rockefeller Records. And
I was just thinking Rockefeller. I'm like, there's no Rockefeller without, like, you know.
Well, and that was a collaboration between Dame Dash, Jay-Z, and Def Jam. Def Jam at that point run by Lior Cohen. And Dame Dash, and this is an older interview, but he was talking about how, hey, look, his beef has never been with Jay-Z. The fact that Jay-Z stayed with Def Jam, the fact that they gave Rockefeller back to Jay-Z, he never really cared. In fact, he kept stopping the interviewer to be like, stop asking me about Jay-Z. I have no problem with Jay. My problem is with Lior Cohen. And there is a nuanced conversation to be had here. And Black artists have had it for a long time, sometimes even bordering on the idea of, why are you making money off our culture without giving something back? That is a refrain you have heard. Culture vulture becomes a term not only on race, but also on these kind of lines. And it's often because of who is controlling the money. So when we get to these situations with Kanye, where, boy, if there's one thing that I have found as somebody who's watched Kanye for a very long time, he is fascinated with platforms. And remember the whole the Houseway interview about like, he was
classic.
He was at that time screaming and yelling about how he hadn't had a good experience with Nike and he needed somebody else to give him a bunch of money, because if given this platform in the same way that he was given the platform with Def Jam Records when he became a music artist, that he was given the platform and all these other things, that he could make gigantic things. And guess what? He did. He was right. The Yeezy brand became iconic for Gap and Adidas because they gave him the platforms. But that also means that he's obsessed with gatekeepers and platform owners and the people that he has to partner with them, of which, like, there's a lot of Jewish people. Like, and so if you have a problem with your boss,
and for good reason, it's because, like, Ashkenazi Jews in particular have higher IQs. I mean, it's like there's a reason why Jews are overrepresented in different industries. It's because they have higher IQs.
Well, and also
more Nobel Prizes.
There were times in the past where you know, it was a sin to handle money, so Jewish people became bankers. It was entertainment became a place where
an interest
there was discrimination. There was anti-Semitism in a lot of different industries, and so Jews wound up finding a foothold in a lot of these places. So, I mean, I guess like Kanye then starts.
Did you watch the Alex Jones?
I watched a supercut. The craziest stuff. You watched the whole thing.
Yeah, it was wild.
It's getting hard to keep track of all these interviews, because I watched about half the Drink Champs interview that was pulled. He did a whole thing on the Shop, the LeBron James's show on HBO that just was not aired. It just shelved. We'll probably never see it. The Drink Champs.
Gavin McGinnis did one.
Out today with Gavin McGinnis. Yeah. He's on Tim Pool's podcast. But again, all right, this is another thing, but we might as well get into it now. Kanye ran for president in 2020, it was, from my look as a gigantic Kanye fan, a huge failure. Unless he was just trying, unless he made money on the merch, which was among the most high quality political merch that I've ever seen. But, that's because he normally sells actual clothes and not just random stuff off Teespring. It was a huge failure, a massive failure. It was a failure, I think, to define himself. It was a failure to run. I think he obviously has this idea that he wants to be in leadership, but at, you know, the Kanye in 2020 that was crying on stage looks like, Dwight Eisenhower in terms of his composure compared to the man that we're seeing right now. He is not only aligned with these elements of fringe right-wing society, some of whom have already been cast out because of their lack of relevance, their lack of relevance and lack of trustworthiness, even amongst right-wing.
Oh, everybody. People. Yeah, everybody voted on it and said, that's it. They're like officially banned from society.
So let's start there. Two folks in particular he has aligned himself with. One is Nick Fuentes. The other is Milo Yiannopoulos, who I often joke is Milo. I can't pronounce his last name. So where do we want to start?
Owen Benjamin. He's bringing Owen Benjamin back, which is another. I don't understand why he's like resurrecting. I don't know if it's like if he sees, because he's Kanye's has a habit of inversions. So it's like kind of that contrarian element, but more extreme. So it's like that's how I think he can justify like telling the world that he's a Nazi. And I don't know if he believes it in the same. And here's the problem with Kanye. He always risks being trapped in a subjectivist nightmare.
Yeah.
Like, he get his own terms become like untranslatable to the rest of us.
Well, I mean, I guess. All right. Let's get back to that in a second, because I think that's probably where we kind of want to end, is exactly where what is Kanye doing and what does he mean, which is an unanswerable question. But
yes. Yeah.
Let's for folks who do not know the names that I just mentioned.
Nick Fuentes,
Milo Yiannopoulos, and Owen Benjamin. Who are they in the world of internet media, conservative media, however you want to define it?
So Milo was useful for a while in like 2016 in the right, in the political right, when there was this sort of new retaliation against the PC culture on campuses. So he was going around with a lot of figures who are very, you know, legitimate, some of them not. Like, he was doing, going to campuses with Christina Hoff Sommers and guys like, you know, Steven Crowder. And he sort of, I forget what got him finally canceled, but I think it was he endorsed pedophilia, essentially.
All right, let's also walk it back for folks who do not, who have no idea who this guy is.
Yeah,
Milo Yiannopoulos is a gay man from Britain who was
very sassy,
a very, very well-fashioned cudgel for the new right that was, as you said, rejecting the idea of identitarianism, because he was Breitbart's
tech editor.
And Breitbart, yeah. He also came to rise during Gamergate, and he is a magnet for controversy.
Yeah.
There's a question of exactly how much he actually writes. There was a lot of allegations that he just had this harem of interns that would write everything that had his byline under it. But there was no doubt that he was a compelling polemicist, especially, and I think probably most mainstreamed, in the idea that, well, I'm gay. I talk about my black fiance and how much I love his black penis. So it satisfies this idea of
he was untouchable.
Right, so you're from the left. I'm more identitarian protected than you are.
Yeah.
And I am for these very conservative ideas. I'm and I think like what you said, the height of his career was when he could say, well, I'm just here to go to Berkeley and talk to people. And why is there a riot? It doesn't that show illness on the left, which was really his kind of bread and butter. What brought him down was a interview he had done where he mentioned that, I believe it was a sexual encounter he had with a priest that made him realize he was gay and that he was thankful that he had that reaction. That he had a book deal. I mean, at that point, man, he was going on Bill Maher's show. He was very much an ascendant right wing figure, and everything kind of collapsed. He lost his book deal. He lost his relationship with the Mercer family that had backed Breitbart, and he has kind of been in the wilderness ever since. Like he allegedly tried to kind of catch on as a furry. He has since renounced his gayness and said that his husband is now a housemate. He sells tchotchkes on a website called Church Militant. So he is just now a very devout Catholic man that sells Virgin Mary pencil holders or something. Like, but he was out. Like he was just totally gone. Let's leave him there for now. Nick Fuentes. How would you describe Nick Fuentes?
I think it's pretty accurate to describe him as a Holocaust denier and somebody who has a serious beef with Jews. He's kind of a young, fiery, antagonistic. I first saw him on Twitter, and kind of the same thing as Milo, where his purpose was to antagonize the people who were, like, everybody kind of agreed were too easily agitated.
Yes.
And who were like in power, but also talking about how the people in power are terrible and how, you know, so he says he's Catholic, and I think he's behind it. Sorry, I'm getting off track here, but
No, please go ahead.
I remember a situation where he was like harassing Ben Shapiro at what's the conference in CPAC.
He was
like heckling Shapiro, and even like people on the left are like, you know, effectively brought Shapiro in and like, man, that guy's crazy, isn't he, Ben Shapiro? Like, that's how far outside of the like political spectrum he is, I think.
The way that I would categorize it for folks who have no idea what the hell we're talking about, and if you don't, God bless you. But
big time.
Imagine sports commentary, right? There's boring sports commentary. I think that LeBron James is good at basketball. Then there's kind of spicy sports commentary. If LeBron James loses a game, LeBron James should be ashamed about his performance. Then there's kind of where I think the elite sports commentators live, which is like just one degree above spicy, to the point where it just might be unreasonable, but it's just reasonable enough that you're interested. The Lakers should think about trading LeBron James because of his performance, right? That's where the elite commentators live, just kind of outside the norm, enough to be exciting, but not anything that is crazy. Then there's so outside the norm. LeBron James was bad at that game because he molests his kids. And that's where Nick Fuentes lives. Nick Fuentes lives in the just totally beyond the pale. I am a capital T, the guy that says the thing over and over and over again. He does not care. He is constantly looking for reaction. But his commentary style is very basic. He just sits on I believe in a basement with a green screen and says the thing and markets himself to edgelords, some of which I'm sure are true racists. Others, I think, are 13 and are mad at their dad and want to find somebody that would annoy everybody around them. And but even then, Nick Fuentes was somebody that had kind of shrunk to a corn cob, and he was just sort of on the side of the road. Even, you know, in our modern world where it's like, hey, out of sight, out of mind. Both these guys were gone until, for whatever reason, it was Kanye who found them.
Yeah, that's what I don't understand. And it's also worth mentioning, I remember Bridget Fetissey told me one time that she got into like an argument with Fuentes, or he was like saying something to her on Twitter, and it was followed by like an army of incels that were just attacking her. So
that's the other thing that we do need to mention. Nick Fuentes is a self-described incel, meaning involuntary celibate. It is its own culture. It goes beyond whether or not they can get a girlfriend. It becomes this whole other level of
weird societal rot. Dude.
That is like a whole other conversation. But one of Fuentes's more famous rants is him saying that when he in an interview said that he had never slept with a woman, on Twitter, a bunch of gay guys were saying, well, I've been with more women than Nick Fuentes, LOL, to which Fuentes, again, being the guy who says the thing, comes up with the galaxy brain point. Well, then that means that the most heterosexual thing you can do is not sleep with women. If the gay guys are bragging, that means sleeping with women is gay, which... if your brain is bending like Stretch Armstrong around that point, then yes, that's what he wants. I think that's
what Kanye enjoys too, that ability to, and it's illogical. Sometimes it's useful though, like just being able to invert things, like Kanye's inversion. But I would say most of the time it's really not the case. It like turns into like the philosophical sloganry of like, you know, well, you know, the eggs are cooking, but sometimes the cooking is the eggs. It's like, no, that doesn't make any sense. Like, you can't just like reverse the order of things. And it is profound. Interesting.
And let's get back to Kanye for a second. There is a thread with Kanye of kind of like old world Mad Men style. A man can, if not prove his worth, can prove his self-confidence by the women for whom he has slept with. Like, even now on like the Alex Jones stuff, he still derides his enemies by saying they ain't never had a supermodel. Like they ain't had one supermodel. I've had, you know, like my wife was Marilyn Monroe. Like, she is a beauty icon for an entire generation. Like, that's who I am. I am doing. He has these sexual politics that have been a part of his work forever, and yet here he is defined with. And please, parents, if you're listening with your children, although Jesus, what an episode to listen with your children. Yeah. Skip ahead 30 seconds to no pussy getting bloggers for whom he has like derided as the worst people in the world before. These guys, a gay dude and an incel, literally.
Yeah, no, it's mind blowing. That's why how we get to where we are here, to this discussion, and that's why it's like that's why, you know, we were talking. You're like, all right, we gotta have a Kanye show. Kanye has like officially barged his way into the political landscape.
Yeah,
and the political landscape is not really well suited to his approach, but his way of viewing the world is, well, society, I'm not fitting in with society right now. So instead of changing the way I act, I should change society.
Yes. Yeah. and that's, I think, the most illuminating
contradictions
part.
The contradictory elements are like cohesive to him a lot of times.
The only thing for which makes sense to me, and let me also say this, I mean, if it's not clear, like Kanye West is my Bruce Springsteen. He's my Prince. Like, he's just an artist for which man came out with College Dropout while I was thinking about dropping out of college. Like, the things for which he was talking about has consistently talked about for my entire life, my entire adult life, were things for which I identified with. Like his journey is very interesting to me. It's very compelling to me. And the one thing that I can say for him as an artist that defines him apart from Madonna, Prince, whoever you might want to name as iconic music forces, and I take nothing away from them, is that his reality was very human. He wanted to be this elevated person that was constantly screwing up, that was constantly making mistakes, that was constantly doubling down on them. So you saw yourself in both his best and his worst. You saw him, you saw yourself in the fact that he would take up a track on his debut album to sing about his mom. And then you'd also, identify with him when you would want the waiter to hurry up with your damn croissants. Like these are bad behavior, good behavior, but that was part of why he was, it is to this day, as interesting as he is, he has also always done is not been afraid to push the lines. I didn't think we would ever see push the lines on Holocaust denial.
No, that's where it's like, oh man, this is too far. But with regard to what you're just saying, I think in many ways, Kanye expresses a crisis of authenticity.
Yeah.
So like the search for an ethics of authenticity. So it's like on one hand, the pursuit of authenticity is like leads to narcissism. The idea that myself is the most important aspect of the world. And then on the other side, it's nihilism, and this sort of the left leaning intellectual postmodernist approach to things. And what we should be doing is trying to like go down the sort of like ethical, middle path towards authenticity. Like it's good to be authentic. Like it's good to like find fulfillment, but like in America, especially, there is this sort of spectacle attached to everything we do.
Yeah.
So we think that like when we're that it's like a requirement that we're authentic, and this results in like a sameness. Like we become the same in our like relentless pursuit of uniqueness and authenticity. We become inauthentic. So when we see someone like Kanye, and he embodies all of that, there's a moral part of him. He's ethical, but he's just unimaginably narcissistic, but he's also broken. Like he's also, he's somehow too famous, too bigger than all of us, and then never famous, never big enough at the same time.
And that's what defines him as an artist. That's why he is, I would say, right now, you know, if you were to rank, let's take out the last, 3 months. Because we were theoretically building up to another gigantic album release. Part of apparently what set him off was that he had 3 days booked at SoFi Stadium, and the beginning of all this crazy stuff led to that getting pulled.
Oh, and I didn't know that.
So he was leading into doing what he had done last year, or this year, 2020, where he had gone, he played twice at the Mercedes-Benz Dome in Atlanta, Georgia. Yeah. He played once in a Soldier Field in Chicago. He played another date in Miami, where the concept, even just the idea of what he was doing, which were like listening parties for unfinished albums.
Yeah.
That you didn't know whether or not those were the only times you would hear these songs, because he would change the songs in between the listening parties. it was, you know, even then, this revolutionary kind of idea. He had these big grandiose visual concepts. In one of them, he ascended to heaven at the end through the roof of the Mercedes-Benz dome. He lit a house on fire during one of them. You know, there was just these big ideas, and it seemed like he was about to get into that again with another album that he had allegedly been working on for a while. And then it is the denial of that, the falling apart of his relationship with Adidas and Gap that leads him to start, you know, this Jewish stuff, which the one thing I will say is that oftentimes anti-Semites, when you go the like protocols of the Elders of Zion stuff, it's like, oh, well, there's the Jews, capital T, capital J, Jews, and they live in the core of the earth and they control the world's banks and stuff like that, right? But they are amorphous. They are somebody generally, maybe every once in a while you get like, oh, it's the Rothschild family or something like that. Like, but it's no one knows like Doug. It's Doug and Gary. Doug and Gary control the banks. The one thing that you could say about Kanye's anti-Semitism is that, like, he knows, it's like six Jews, like, and he knows all of their names, and he is very, very mad at these six people. He is mad at, like, Ari Emanuel, four other people at CAA, probably Kim's agent, and, you know, the guy he used to talk to at JP Morgan. Like that's who he's angry at.
That's the Jews for him. Yeah.
And so he wants to say the meanest things that he can say that will upset these six people. I'm extrapolating that. I do think that when nobody ever stops him and says, wait, who exactly are you talking about? Because he'll sprinkle them in every once in a while in his rants. Is like, He'll taunt Ari Emanuel.
He'll say constantly.
Yeah, he'll say, what do you think about that, Ari? Like, what do you think about that? Like, he's upset with several people. Now, whether or not they did anything to upset him, we don't know, because we don't know what happens behind the scenes.
No, and with Kanye, you don't know, because you have these moments of like redemption where you're like, oh man, yeah, I guess he was right. And then other times it's like now I feel and like you were saying earlier, but like I walked into my wedding to Ultralight Beam, you know, Kanye is like I remember listening to College Dropout, and it was just, I can remember where I was the moment I heard it for the first time. Like this is a struggle that I personally, it's a strange conflict. Like culturally, it's even trickier. Because he is like such an important, he plays such an important role in society, like beyond the antagonistic element, like his art is just brilliant. I mean, his impact, even the people who are like, I'm not into his music. Like, well, do you enjoy music? Like, do you enjoy any music that's come out in the last 20 years? Because he's had an impact on it. Even if it's Mumford and Sons.
I mean, you know, the most interesting Jay-Z album that could come out right now is a Watch the Thrones album with Kanye.
Wow.
Beyonce just put out an album that, while good, I really like the new Beyonce album, it wasn't exactly a world killer, right? It didn't define culture.
You know, Jay-Z Taylor Swift. Go ahead.
Yeah. I would say, I mean, like right now, if you're going to rank the biggest artists, it's like, you know, Drake and Taylor Swift and everything. And
another
dud
of an album. Drake's, and all of them are like you were saying about the commentator. All these albums are like sit in the safe commentary. It's like, that's so boring.
Well, yeah, Drake's biggest thing on his last album was making fun of Megan Thee Stallion, who his friend shot. So it's like that's Drake trying to be edgy, is like, ha ha ha, my friend shot you in the foot, like to a woman.
Somebody needs to take away reggaeton from him, man. Whoever's making it the reggaeton beats for Drake, Sorry, this is a whole other thing.
I liked her loss. I actually liked her loss. I liked it. I flew both my Canadian and British flags for 21 Savage and Drake for their collaboration album.
Yeah, that track for sure, or that album for sure, man.
Yeah, but no, but the one before that, geez, it was like lo-fi beats to a brunch to. I didn't enjoy it. That's not my favorite Drake.
Yeah.
But yeah, no, I mean, I think artistically there is no bigger celebrity, because the other celebrities for which you could compare him to manage their world very, very much, you know? I mean, all right, let me ask you this. Where are we at on the idea that Kanye being a conspiracy theorist is nothing new? It's just for the fact that he is espousing far less popular conspiracy theories. Because before, I mean, this is a man on Heard Him Say, his lead single, after he hits, right? So everybody knows, if you're going to be a major artist, when you have your big first album, you can't flop. You can't sophomore slump, right? That is what defines, that separates the wheat from the chaff. His first single, Heard Him Say, with the Maroon 5 singer on the hook. So he is designing this for pop radio, has the line, "I know the government administered AIDS." Like, that's, he sang that at the NFL opening that year, and he didn't censor the line. He just said, "I know the government administered AIDS." Like, that is a thing for which has been baked in. And like, that was a part for which was very successful for him. And, you know,
so I really like that. Like, I think it's really important to like provide resistance to any sort of power.
Yeah.
And any sort of like and Chappelle is really good at it. Chappelle's much better. Chappelle is like,
well, yes,
he walks the line. He's antagonistic, but he knows how to pull back before he gets hit in the face. And Kanye doesn't know how to do that. He just leans in.
But that's not the point of Kanye. Like,
for sure.
Dave Chappelle is a surgeon's scalpel. Like, he very specifically, very deliberately kind of goes over these lines. He means everything that he says, and he is designing them for laughs. I saw Chappelle once, speaking of the idea of comparative pain. This is way back in the day. This is when I was in college. And he was doing a thing that he wound up doing on one of his Netflix specials, talking about the comparative pain between the Black and Jewish people. And he says, in the version I saw, that he always gets caught up when it comes to the Holocaust, because he can't think of anything that Black people that have suffered worse than the Holocaust. But the one thing that always gives him hope is that he hopes one day he can find Hitler's quotes about Jesse Owens at the Olympics. Because in his mind, you knew there weren't any just pictures of them chilling, like, and he like gave like a peace sign, like you just give you the visual of Jesse Owens and Hitler posing together. In the Netflix version, he said, you know, his Jewish friend similarly won, but it's always like, well, don't forget about the Pharaoh, and he's like
Egypt, oh, we're going back to Egypt. Oh man, I didn't know. I didn't know there was more. I mean, with Chappelle, there's always more of the joke. Like he works through those ideas so much. Like in the Alex Jones, did you see that he went after Chappelle?
No, I didn't. I'm not surprised. Yeah. I'm surprised it didn't leak out on social media. What did he say about Chappelle?
Oh, he called him a hack. And here's where he really messed up. He said that Chappelle steals jokes from Owen Benjamin.
Oh, really?
Owen Benjamin. Yeah. Yeah. Which is, and then he read, Owen Benjamin was like texting him at the time, and he texted some jokes, and they were not funny.
Yeah.
They were like just very, it was just like, it sounded like the rantings of an anti-Semite in couplet form.
Yeah.
But that's crazy. It's a lot. That's nuts.
Well, and that's, I think if there's one thing beyond the virulent anti-Semitism that is the most disappointing about this entire process is that I low-key, to bring it back to politics for a second, think that Kanye could be a far more effective political figure on the religious right, on the evangelical right. You know, there was a path for which I thought he was walking at a certain point where he did that Joe Rogan interview where he talked about building a stadium sized venue for Sunday service and designing hymns that could almost be like soccer chant a bull. Like, so you would feel in this kind of cacophonous stadium that kind of reverberation and spirituality and everything. And there was a line, you know, and you were there when he went to Osteen's church. Mm-hmm. There was a line for which I could have seen him say, like, this is my path. Billy Graham might not have never been able to win the presidency, but everybody who wanted to be president had to come through Billy Graham. He could be that political force. He could have that there. And it's because when he went and did his one big speech in South Carolina, he did his one big political event, and he gets up on stage and talks about when Kim Kardashian first called him and said that she was pregnant, and he said, abort it. And then he started crying, saying, I almost killed my child. Like, that is for a millennial to Gen Z audience the most compelling pro-life statement that I had seen. I mean, normally pro-life stuff is preaching to the choir, literally. Like, you are talking to religious people that already agree with you. Like, the fact that a major celebrity was revealing a very, very, very private moment for which he was having very human emotions and then was reacting in the way that he reacted, I found to be extraordinarily compelling. And instead of following that, he is following this disgusting retreads of people that I don't think are particularly talented. And get spoiler alert, for all of these guys that he's aligned himself with, they're going to rip him so much harder when all this is done than they will have ever helped him. That is their MO forever. All of these guys.
Bridge burners. They enjoy burning the bridges. They're just odious people, really. Like, they're outcasts, and they're more than outcasts. They're like true deplorables.
And it's a reason why I don't talk about him on the show. I hate talking about him on the show, because
I agree.
It's not productive. They're not viable. They don't really have anything to connect to. And so that's why one of the many things, many of the many layers of why this is as ugly as it is like, God, them. This line of dialogue, you're gonna fall for the okie doke over and over and over again. And I get it that it is Kanye saying, say whatever you want about me, I'll repeat whatever you want to say about me. This is about my message. The message should be the thing. Well, guess what, man? You're not getting your message out. And I do think for folks who have, you know, followed him for a long time, I do think that, like, there is a political message he could shine up, but boy, howdy, is he far away from it right now, in my opinion.
I totally agree. Yeah. And this is tricky because, you know, I've talked about my dislike of activists before, but I also include, like, people who are pushy with their religion in activism. So it's like, but at the same time, there's like Carl Schmitt said, like, the political is theological and the theological is political. Like, that you can't remove those things. Like, an exception is just a political version of a miracle. I think Kanye's biggest flaws right now are his biggest political flaws are inherently theological for that same reason, but also beyond. And the biggest example of that is, like, his misuse of the idea of love as a justification for all of this. That's how he justified. And this is like the entanglement of his logic. It's really, really bad logic. It's very Kanye logic. But he starts with the idea that, you know, you should love everybody, which is, you know, that's complicated. But he follows with, therefore, I should love the most disgusting person who's existed in modern history, who's Hitler. Kanye's problem recently is that he uses the word especially before the word Hitler.
Yeah.
But it's also like a misinterpretation of what the purpose of love within the system he's using actually is. Like, it's not, love isn't peace. It can be a sword as well. It can be division. It can be, the idea that limitations make for happiness doesn't seem to apply to Kanye. Like, the boundaries are just completely removed, and he's using, he considers himself a Nazi because he loves, and he loves because he hates Jews. And it's just this constant back and forth. Whereas I'm like, it's constantly a struggle with Kanye. It's always a struggle to dig down far enough and discover what tiny chaos is motivating the enormous storm. And in this situation, I think you're exactly right. That it's personal slights from it's like a business conflict that he has that's exploding to like this grandiose anti-Semitism. Yes. I don't know. Like, is that excusable? Is that even the right question?
At this point, the only thing I hope is that at the very least, the streamers don't pull his music so his kids can still have royalties. Like, you know, that's the biggest thing. I mean, like, I'm not even thinking comeback. I'm not even thinking rehabilitation. I'm not even thinking anything. At this point, I'm just like, Kanye, I just hope that your kids are able to live.
Because I think that's off
your music.
He's done, right? I mean, like, unless he releases the greatest album ever made.
No, he's going to have to go away. He's going to have to go away for a while. And I do think that there will be an element of the falling out he has with this, you know, chucklehead crew that he's with now that will draw a fiery line between then and now. We've talked about the message the entire time, so hopefully we will get to head off any criticism we would get for this, but how much do you pay attention to the idea that, like, you know, he has said he's bipolar in the past. He says now he was misdiagnosed as bipolar. He has been 5150'd in the past in California, where he was involuntarily hospitalized. How much do you attribute what is happening to mental illness?
I know people with bipolar one, and they don't say that they love Hitler. At least I've never heard them say that. But you're right. There is like an element of severe mania, and we have seen, like, when he did the Letterman interview on Netflix, he was on his meds. He talked about being on his meds, and he was more subdued and coherent. But I think there is like an inherent incoherence to Kanye West.
Yes.
Which makes it difficult to parse out where the mental illness is. And by his own, you know, his refashioning of Aristotle's idea of like, name one genius that ain't crazy.
Yeah.
I think recently the issue, and this is where it gets even trickier. It's like the piece that we wrote for Substack. He has gone beyond considering himself a genius, and now he sees himself as a prophet. So that's when it becomes like, well, it's anyone's guess whether or not he's insane at this point, whether he's like completely gone, completely lost it. because there does, it's like, I don't know if it's psychosis or what. It seems like a bipolar episode, a severe bipolar episode, but it's going on for a while. Like it's, I don't know. And the interview that he did with Gavin McGinnis, it was.
Did you watch that? I know you just posted it.
Yes.
To me in the chat today.
Yes. Yeah. It was good. I mean, I profiled Gavin McGinnis. I sat down with him at the height of the Proud Boys stuff when he was when he was still in New York. We sat down at a bar for like 4 or 5 hours, and because I grew up reading Vice, man, he's an interesting guy, but he handled Kanye very well. And I say handled for, I mean that.
Well, I think if we're going to look at guy who says the thing.
Yeah.
Gavin McGinnis is closer to Stephen A. Smith than the whatever the equivalent of Nick Fuentes, right? He very much has understood being the guy that says the thing. He very much enjoys being that guy. He likes being in the center of attention. He wants to code himself as that, but I don't think he feels like he needs to live off it. I think it's something that he likes to kick the electric fence every once in a while.
He loves it. Yeah. He told me something too about Vice that made sense, and it's missing from Vice since he left, but he said like he always approached something through the inversion of the brows. So like if he was writing a story about something lowbrow, he took a highbrow approach
to it.
And then the other way around, which I love that. I think that's like fascinating. And that's very American too. Especially for a Canadian. I don't know how we're just like tangent kings, dude.
Well, I know. I mean, look, we're talking about Kanye West having a meltdown. So I think it is well suited that we just sort of ping pong around everywhere. Yeah, I think we've kind of gotten to the end of it. It is obviously.
I do too. Sadly.
Yeah. You know, you texted me that in your day job, you were asked about, you know, what to say about this this incident, and your response was, you know, Elvis is dead. I think that there is a part of that, and if that is the case, then I think the world is poorer for it. I think music is poorer for it. I think politics is poorer for it. You know, in I forget. I've been trying to remember who said this, but it was either Chappelle or Martin Lawrence. I think it might have been during Martin Lawrence's comeback special after he had a big psychotic episode. But he was like talking about like, isn't it weird that there only gets to be one big black celebrity at a time? And then that black celebrity very often just kind of goes crazy. And I don't know whether or not, you know, there's something to it. He had a whole routine about it, or maybe I'm conflating it with Dave Chappelle and his Oprah special. But I just think it is, fame's a bizarre thing. Obviously, hate, anti-Semitism is among our oldest social contagions. It is a terrifying one. I don't blame any Jewish person for hearing one whiff of any of that from Kanye and being done.
100%. Yeah.
You know, because I know how present that is. And again, let me reiterate how I started, which is like, when anti-Semitism hasn't changed at all, but it hasn't really evolved, it's still, you know, these same kind of tropes, then like, I can understand why it's present.
It's a scapegoat. It's always been a scapegoat mechanism.
Yes.
So like, as a society, the need for a sacrifice, and the need as a way to alleviate some sort of pressure. You use the phrase social contagion. Yeah. Like, there's a virus in society. We have to like cleanse society. The way to do it is to sacrifice somebody.
Yeah.
Hey, let's get the Jews again. Like
there
that's,
we go.
That's typically the structure of how it's gone throughout.
Well, because it's an other. It is, it yes. is, you know, and, yep. and especially in Europe, there were, you know, ethnic community lines on stuff like that and social lines. So, man,
it's tricky, man. Really. It's getting harder to navigate the minefield of like Kanye fandom. It's tricky, man. It's like for the first time, like my header on Twitter was always like me interviewing Kanye. Picture me. And I took it down, man. And that was like a moment for me that it was very sad. Cause it was for me, that wasn't about like, hey man, look, I've talked to this famous person. It was like, hey, you know, I have had this opportunity to like tap into the culture right in front of me. The culture that's yeah. like influencing every moment of our lives. And it was like, he's imploded. I feel like it's heartbreaking. That's the word I would use for all of this. It's heartbreaking on every level.
Yeah. I can't disagree with you. And hopefully this has been illuminating to folks. You know, certainly there's no shortage of commentary around Mr. West. So hopefully at least what we were able to bring was something unique, because I know for the both of us, it is to watch somebody for whom you've admired as an artist. Somebody that has been so unique in his craft to, you know, really be down bad on the level that he is right now. And to be either so consumed, to be so consumed with hate, because no matter yeah. what, whether or not you believe that Kanye believes that, you know, the Holocaust, you know, has been exaggerated, or that Hitler was a great guy, or he just really wants to say things that he knows is going to piss off people that hurt him. There's no argument that he is being animated by hate. He is being very much animated by that, be it yeah. a deep-seated thing that was with them the entire time, or something that has come up because he now has, you know, these beefs. He believes that these people have either damaged or ruined his life. And by these people, I very specifically mean Ari Emanuel, the three dudes at JP Morgan and Kim Kardashian.
The three
agent.
People. The three, yeah.
Like the six. There's like, if any, the next person, and at this point it might be us considering he's doing interviews with anybody. But like the next person to talk about him would say like, all right, Kanye, when you say the Jews, like I got a feeling that you mean like six people. Can you just name the six people? Like just the people that you're really mad at right now. But it is an animation of hate. And that's,
man, that's this was a tough one
because they're again, to go back to that initial thing with him from the first stuff that he did, you were never far away from the struggle, but you were never far away from looking at the path forward. And, yeah. and that's really what has always defined him. And it doesn't feel like there's a lot of path forward right now.
No.
Either in his messaging or in his demeanor, that he has allowed mental illness, these grievances, a deep-seated hatred for the Jewish people, whatever you want to put into that goulash, that is driving right now. And again, at this point, I just hope his kids are still able to get royalties.
Yeah, I agree. I agree, man. I think this is like the most difficult discussion you and I have had on here.
100%.
This was tricky.
You don't want to in any way come off as disrespectful.
Yeah.
To you know, the Jewish people, to the idea of pain. I mean, that's
yeah.
part of what Kanye did, I mean, you know, Kanye came out of an era of rap that was very much eloquent about black pain. There were, you know, Public Enemy in the 80s was very militant about black pain. And when you get into a lot of the Southern rap and a lot of the kind of, you know, quote unquote, sort of, you know, back then we would call it woke rap, right? But it was a far different definition than it is now. But this idea of, okay, eyes are open. We draw strength from each other. This is Goody Mob. This is Common. This is Talib Kweli and Mos Def. Like these artists were very, you know, present in the pain without it necessarily being anger. Anger was there, and it was an amazing era for that kind of music. Kanye came out of that and I think transcended it in so many ways, because he was also like, wait, no, why don't I get to be Prince? Why don't I get to what, why do I have to stay being the guy who talks about black pain? I don't want to be that. I want to be the next level. I want to go to the top of Mount Olympus. He did. And now, you know, just when they like you, make them unlike you. Another great Kanye quote.
Yeah, for sure. Yeah. And that attitude is like, I don't like that when anybody does it and politically, like when they get to that point of just antagonism for the sake of antagonism, or like that binary thinking of like, well, whoever I'm against is my enemy. And then they like knock out all their enemies and their enemy becomes somebody that should not be an enemy.
Yeah. I think that there's always going to be a line of protecting the franchise. And yeah. And I think where Kanye has gotten to the point, and maybe he thought it was irredeemable 3 weeks ago. And this is him just saying, no, we're going to follow the spiral all the way down. I'm going to do all the things that you think I should not do. I'm going to say all the things that you think I should not say. And we'll see what's left when I absolutely get to the bottom. Maybe that's it. Maybe it is just more of a classic self-destructive downward spiral where he feels like he had got to the top of the mountain and now he wants to ride it all the way down. Who knows?
Yeah, man, we shall see. I don't know, man.
Yeah,
I don't know.
All right. Well, Kevin, thank you for having this depressing conversation with me.
Hopefully people
liked it. Yeah, no, I think
It's good to work. You and I are so good about like, look, man, let's work through this together. You know, it's like we got to work. You and I are so good about working through things.
Yeah.
And this is one of those things, especially for both of us. Kanye was our original connection.
Yep.
Like that's
you came on the show because you covered him with Osteen. That was the first time that you were on the show. So that is what it is. Kevin Ryan, thank you, thank you, thank you for coming on.
Good to be here, brother.
And that'll wrap it up for us today. Politics, 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 brought to you, as always, by everybody who goes to TakePoliticsSeriously.com. Supports us if you want that bonus episode on Monday, that bonus episode on Thursday. You sign up at the $3 level. At the Titanic $10 tier, you get your name read at the end of the podcast. But on this episode, I'll tell you what, my voice is absolutely shredded from doing the live stream at px3live.com on Twitch. Thank you to everybody who showed up. It was an absolute blast. And thank you to the entire crew that did it. I will make it up to the $10 tier on the next episode of the program. On the next episode of the program, we will be joined by Stephen Gutowski of The Reload, talking about the state of gun laws in America. But until then, this is your old pal, Justin Robert Young, saying some shows talk about politics, others talk about politics, and still more discuss politics, but deals. This is the only show that dares discuss. Oh, yes. Three. Trouble, 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 trouble. Yeah. Yeah. Yeah.
Diamond Club hopes you have enjoyed this program.
Dog and Pony Show Audio.